Good evening, everybody. Welcome to another edition of the Sports Inquirer podcast. Your host, E. Marcel Fortute. Hope all of you are doing good out there. A little bit of a late start to the show, dealing with some technical issues. But hey, that's whenever you're recording a live show, that's going to happen. So we're going to be here for the next hour or so talking about all the news and notes in the world of sports. We're going to start off talking about mixed martial arts. I'm going to review the events that took place last Saturday on the Fox Sports 1 event that was in Boston, and other mixed martial art news from around the world. We're going to review some things in the NFL as well. We're in the midst of preseason action. A lot of teams are playing their third preseason game this upcoming weekend. I'm going to talk about my fantasy draft as well. I'm not going to talk too much fantasy, but I'm going to delve into it. Big week in the world of sports media with the debut of the Fox Sports 1, the new sports network, the English Premier League premiering on the NBC Sports Network, and other rumblings and grumblings from ESPN. So I'm going to delve into the sports media world. Going to give some analysis on the angst of fans in 2013. I'm going to play some audio clips from an event that actually took place in London this past week, and it's going to tie it together with how fans are in 2013. And finally, I'm going to delve into what's ruffling my feathers, the state of hip-hop in 2013. So a lot of reflection, analysis, and in-depth commentary on a variety of things in the world of sports and beyond. When we come back, we're going to have our Passing the Guard section of the show, and going to talk about mixed martial arts here on the Sports Inquirer podcast. Welcome back to the show, E. Marcel Fortute. As always, there are many ways to communicate with me about the podcast, my website, thesportsinquirer.net, and beyond. You can always follow us on Twitter under Sports Inquirer, all one word. Send me an email at sportsinquirer@gmail.com. And finally, you can follow me on Facebook under The Sports Inquirer. We have a group that's always looking for new members to join. So those are the many ways to contact me. And as I said, go to the website. We're going to start recording hopefully about 3 shows per week with the summer season coming to an end, NFL and all of college football starting up, busy in other sports as well, pennant races and Major League Baseball. We're going to start doing some more recording. So very excited about that. What I'm going to delve into right now is our Passing the Guard portion of the show, and we're going to view some mixed martial arts. Saw the entire card from MMA on, well, Fox Sports 1, really the first big event for the network that took place last Saturday in Boston. Excellent win by Chael Sonnen, moved up to 205 and fought back at the light heavyweight division. He fought for the light heavyweight title against John Jones earlier this year, but before that, he had not fought in 205 in a very long time. Looked excellent against Shogun Hua, got the submission victory. Very surprised by that. With Sonnen, I thought he would take advantage of his wrestling skills, maybe get a ground and pound. I did not expect him to put a submission onto Hua, and really opens up a lot of opportunities for him at 205. And even at 185 as well, you've seen a lot of people starting to call him out. Now, Wanderlei Silva trying to get a fight, Vitor Belfort. A lot of guys are interested in fighting Chael Sonnen because he is a quality talker and can build the fights up. And the subversive part of it is Sonnen being a commentator for Fox Sports, you know he's going to be on a lot of main cards because he is a major draw in martial arts. So a lot of these fighters are smart, and you notice a lot of the older fighters want to get in the cage with them. So a really good win for him, extends his career, and there are a lot of viable options at 185 or 205 for him. For Hua, really tough loss for him. I think you're starting to see the, I won't say the end of him as a fighter, but the outside chances of him making a title run are completely over. Those days are finished. And I know he's a young fighter by age standards. I think he's 32 or 33, which you would think you see guys like Randy Couture and a variety of other guys fight in their late 30s and early 40s. But he is an old 32 or 33 from the training in Brazil to fighting in Pride in Japan, all of those vicious fights that he had over there in Japan. His body, I think, is broken down, especially with the major knee surgeries that he's dealt with the past few years. While he's still a viable fighter and has a decent name to go with him, I don't think you're going to see him contend for any major titles, and he may have entered the catchweight category within 205, which is really tough for old school mixed martial art fans like myself, who saw him burst into the scene and become a dominant fighter in Japan with Pride. But since he's come over to the UFC, yes, he did beat Lyoto Machida in their second fight and claim the UFC championship, which is very respectable. But I think he has seen better days ahead of him. Better days are past him, and he has to look towards the future and really evaluate where he is going to go. A man that has really disappointed me as far as an MMA fighter over the past 4 or 5 years has been Alistair Overeem, who I talked up highly when he signed his contract to join the Ultimate Fighting Championship. I bought into the hype. I saw the huge body mass, and very respectable, won the K-1 championship, which means he was the best kickboxer in the world. That has nothing to scoff at and nothing to disrespect. I thought that he'd be not only a major contender for the UFC championship as far as in heavyweight division, but I thought he had potential to be a legendary guy. What I ignored are two things. One, despite all of his success in that K-1 run and decent moments in Japan, he still never really had a dominant presence at 205. And now he bumped up to 265 to fight a heavyweight. I don't see how the 60 extra pounds really should have helped him. And then secondly, the allegations of maybe his, and I don't like speculating about drug usage as far as performance enhancing drugs with him or any other athlete. But when you see what he looked like before and what he looks like now, I don't want to say it's obvious, but something may have been done for him to reach that level. And his loss over Travis Brown, just extremely disappointing. Good for Travis Brown, who is moving his way up the ladder of the heavyweight division. But Overeem should not only physically, but with experience, dominate a man like Travis Brown. But that did not happen. Michael McDonald, major bantamweight contender, impressive win over Brad Pickett. At 22 years old, I was unemployed with a college degree and living with my brother in his house. I was not contending for a major championship in the top organization in the world for a sport. These young fighters, we've talked about Rory McDonald, Michael McDonald, a lot of these guys 25 years old and under are really starting to make their presence felt in MMA. I was really impressed with his win over Brad Pickett. And just the overall coverage of the fights, and we'll delve a lot more into the media aspect of Fox Sports 1, so I'm going to save my commentary on that as far as how the network is handling the broadcast of their live sporting events. But I'm really excited about seeing the fights on a good network. It was an excellent way to open up the commentary. I'll delve into a little, since we're talking passing the guard in combat sports, I really like seeing the live boxing that was on Monday night. I unfortunately did not see too much of it, so I can't comment on the fighters, but the fact that we're seeing some live boxing on Fox Sports 1 is a really good sign for mixed martial art fans, boxing fans, combat fans in general. So I'm really happy to see that going on. Outside of the event on in Boston of Fox Sports 1, see that Lyoto Machida is moving to middleweight to face Tim Kennedy later on in this year. I believe it's going to be for a fight for the troops. I don't know what network it's on or the date. But I was on SureDog.com, got to give credit to them, and I saw that the fight is going to take place. Interesting that since Anderson Silva lost to Chris Weidman, and that middleweight title is on another person for the first time in years, that a lot of these guys are starting to make their case and make their push to move to that middleweight division. I still think Anderson Silva has plenty to be heard from. He lost that fight, but that rematch at the end of the year, he can definitely win that championship again. But even if he wins that title and gains it, Anderson Silva, I believe, is 38 or 39 years old. Once again, a man who has been in a lot of fights. You cannot ignore that factor. And guys like Lyoto Machida, Michael Bisping, Munoz, and Chael Sonnen, possibly, and a variety of others are looking at that right now and saying, hey, Vitor Belfort as well, looking at that opportunity to maybe get that belt. And Weidman is not going to go anywhere as well. Another young, hungry fighter. Excellent training camp he's under with Longo. That middleweight division, just because of that one loss, has really opened up. Seeing Machida, who I think can make that cut to 185, even though Machida's kind of had an up and down. I mean, he's become a light heavyweight really consistently, but he's fought at heavyweight in the past. He faced BJ Penn years ago in that division. Now he's moving down to middleweight. I think his body type is going to work well for it. We all know about his defensive prowess, so his body, at least from the outside looking in, should not have too much wear and tear on it, relative for a fighter, of course. So I think that move is going to be really good for him overall. So those are my thoughts on things that have been going on in mixed martial arts. If you have any questions for me or want to comment on them, please send me an email, once again, to mportute@gmail.com or to sportsinquirer@gmail.com. And once again, always follow us on Twitter, Sports Inquirer, all one word. And we're going to take our next break here. And when we come back, we're going to touch on news and notes in the world of the NFL and delve into college football as well, being in the Southeast. Got a Southeast specific story that just broke today here on the Sports Inquirer podcast. Welcome back to the podcast. Here's your man, E. Marcel Portute, here talking about the world of football. Delve into NFL and then going to touch real quick on a college football story that broke out. All right, so my fantasy draft, my boy Spencer Merrill, who, if you're a fan of the show, has been, my second guest. First guest was Condor Addison, who we are still trying to get back on the show. Entering sophomore year of high school. School just started up. But now that football season is in full swing, college football starting about a week from now. Actually, as a matter of fact, tonight would be the first two college football games. We're going to get Condor back on the show pretty soon. But Spencer, he is actually inviting me over to his fantasy draft. I have not done a fantasy football season in about 4 or 5 years. Last time I did a season is when I was working back at Belmont. Shout out to Sean Sawyer and the crew down at Belmont. And I actually made it, I think, to the quarterfinals or semifinals of the season. And while I did it in years past, especially back in college and little bit after I, so my, and I think a lot of guys who are big sports fans like myself in my generation, I'm 32. My biggest playing period was probably between, I'd say 20 and 25. And then I really took a break from it, just started moving around with different jobs and things like that. So I really didn't have a lot of opportunity or time to do fantasy football. And honestly, another thing that happened is I did a fantasy baseball season, and I got so worn down by following baseball. And I love baseball, but when you have to follow it every single day for fantasy purposes, I think that wore me down on the concept of fantasy sports. But I'm dipping my toe back into the pool of it, and my draft is on Saturday. And it's doing a little bit of initial research. Back when I was doing it, and I said in my mid-20s and early 20s, the biggest thing were getting running backs. And we're talking back in the day of Sean Alexander, Priest Holmes, you know, all of those guys. Those are the big-time running backs, Larry Johnson, that you wanted to have on your team, because the league, while there was a little bit of passing, was still predominantly about the run, and those guys who got the biggest opportunities. Now I'm starting to do research on quarterbacks and looking at wide receivers like Calvin Johnson and Larry Fitzgerald, Roddy White down here, Julio Jones. Are those guys going to be my first-round pick, or do I pick a Drew Brees or Tom Brady, Matt Ryan even down here in Atlanta? It's just a different approach for me, and I don't know if I'm really ready for it. And I guess it translates into the change of the league overall from back in the day where guys were averaging 1,500 yards per season as far as like running and getting 10, 15 touchdowns, and that was it. And that was what your main focus was an offensive end. Now, you'd have your occasional guys like Kurt Warner, who would throw for a lot of yards with St. Louis, and a cast of others, if you go way back, guys like Dan Marino would throw for the majority of the time, and those were kind of focuses as far as your fantasy team. But the new era of quarterbacks now has been incredible, and I haven't even mentioned the guys who also have a running option, from Cam Newton to Colin Kaepernick, Russell Wilson. Now, some of those guys run a little bit more than others, but if you can get 40 or 50 yards per game from those guys on the running side, or the occasional maybe 60 or 70 yards, that could be a difference between a win and a loss for a week. So doing a lot of analysis on that. As I said, I am just a deer in the headlights, very confused about what to do with my fantasy draft. I'm glad that I'm involved back in it. So shout out to Spencer, as always. The staph infections in Tampa, that big story came out that I think they had some guys, I think Carl Nix, an offensive lineman for the Tampa Bay Bucks, also their kicker, are both dealing with staph infections in the foot. We just talked about mixed martial arts, and it's funny that this story comes up and it ties together, because you're hearing all of the nasty horror stories of what staph has done and how it's an issue for the NFL locker room. Maybe because I'm a mixed martial arts fan, I've seen all the stories of Mark Hunt, who recently, after his loss to Junior Dos Santos, dealing with a very nasty staph infection, and the legendary stories of Big Nog and the Kevin Randleman with the upper, I guess, under the armpit, his staph infection, Mo Lual, Forrest Griffin, Ken Shamrock, Mayhem Miller. Those guys you just thought off on the top of my head who all dealt with staph infection. I'm really surprised it doesn't happen more often in all sports, but especially the physical contact sports where sweat is involved. All sports involve sweat, obviously. But anytime you deal with guys body to body grinding against each other, and including ice hockey and obviously football, I'm surprised it doesn't happen as much as it does. So seeing that staph infection situation is, I think, something to be very concerned about, not only for Tampa, but for a lot of organizations. I have several guys who practice jiu-jitsu and other grappling sports, judo, and the biggest issue is cleaning up the gym and avoiding things like staph infection. And while I think that sports like wrestling have been very revolutionary and very forward about how to approach that as far as the training camps and the facilities, even those deal with staph infections despite the best efforts. As seeing the NFL practice facility deal with it, you know, is really interesting from the medical side of things. So hopefully that works out for them. Von Miller being suspended for 6 games because for substance abuse violation by the NFL. I've seen the different drugs they said he may have been involved in. I don't really feel comfortable commenting on which one it is because I don't know what officially the drugs that he took or maybe a failed a test on. But him being suspended 6 games is a major blow for the Broncos. And while he'll be back for the rest of the regular season, not only do the Broncos have division aspirations, they're clearly the best team in the division, I think. Even though Kansas City may have a decent shot to win some games, they have Super Bowl aspirations. And the best way to get through there is to get home field advantage for the entire playoffs. Make Houston or New England or Baltimore come to your facility, come to your field in the AFC Championship game. Losing Von Miller, who may be on the short list of the top 4 or 5 defensive players in the entire NFL, is a major blow for them. So it's interesting to see how they fight through that and deal with that suspension. And then finally, we'll delve into college football. The SEC coaches recently announced their all-SEC teams. And while you've seen the usual suspects like Jadeveon Clowney and 9 Alabama defensive players on the first team, which is ridiculous, the talent that the Crimson Tide have, the biggest story was the quarterbacks that were named to the team. Now, you have 3 quarterbacks who make a legitimate case for being the top quarterback in the SEC. Let's start with Johnny Manziel, Heisman Trophy winner, 5,000 yards combined last season, maybe one of the best individual seasons in the history of college football. He's in the running. A.J. McCarron, 2-time national champion in a row, 30 touchdowns, 3 interceptions last season. You look at him as a potential guy. Aaron Murray, who led Georgia to the SEC East Championship, is going to on pace to break all of the passing records in SEC history as far as touchdowns, total yards, throwing, and all of those things. The coaches ended up voting for Aaron Murray for first team and Johnny Manziel for second team, A.J. McCarron for third. As much as I'm in Georgia country and think Aaron Murray is a quality quarterback and gets critiqued a little bit unfairly here in Georgia, there is no way he should be the first team selection by the coaches. The only 2 guys I think you can make a case for, if you go by individual talent and production, it's got to be Johnny Manziel. If you go by the guy who's a winner, and if you go by who wins championships, which is a respectable criteria if you want to go that way, you have to go with A.J. McCarron. You have Aaron Murray, who is not as productive offensively as Manziel and hasn't won as much as McCarron. If you really want to go to the look at the talent that Alabama has, maybe the best offensive line in college football history, and the variety of running backs that they have, McCarron still controls that offense, and 30 touchdowns, 3 interceptions, something that just doesn't happen with a guy who's not talented. The pettiness of the SEC coaches of not voting Manziel to the first team, I think, is very disappointing. And we always talk about all of these polls and the media doesn't have biases, or less like the coaches. Everyone has biases. I pride myself to be as objective as I can when it comes to my work or professionally as far as world of sports media. But even I still have biases. And if you listen to the show enough or read enough of my writings, you can figure out what those are. But I think and it's a preseason poll, so it doesn't matter in the grand scheme of things. If it was the end of the season poll, I'd have a lot more issue with it. But this reminds you once again of you cannot trust anybody when it comes to a vote. Everyone has an agenda. And it may not come out the first 5 or 6 times, but if you do something, if you vote for something 60, 70 times, the agenda is going to come out. And that's where you saw the coaches think they were taking a stand against Manziel and the accusations of his maybe getting payments for the autographs and maybe the off-the-field lifestyle, all of those things. They may have sent a message, and it may have worked because I'm talking about it. But overall, I think that was kind of a cheap shot and very petty. And if you're going to go with that route, go with AJ McCarron. If you're going to make the, I don't like Johnny Manziel and what he stands for, just go with McCarron. Don't go with Aaron Murray. And I said, no knock on Murray. He's a very good quarterback, quality guy. I think he's a good leader. And Georgia has a chance to have a special season. But if you're looking at the preseason and the body work of those three guys, there's no way that he should be on the first team. So we're going to take our next break here. And when I come back, I'm going to discuss sports media. Going to delve into all of the events that have taken place over the past week with the launch of a major sports network and the tweaking of two others here on the Sports Inquirer podcast. Welcome back to the Sports Inquirer podcast, your host E. Marcel Portu. Since we were talking about football last segment before I delve into the media, really some good news here on my front with football and the general job overall. Really good happenings with the neighbor newspapers here in North Atlanta or North Georgia. Going to be at the Georgia Dome on Saturday afternoon or Saturday morning covering the Corky Kell Classic. So if any of you out there are Georgia media members that are going to be at the event, come up to me, say hello. I'm going to be looking out for you as well. And more importantly, I'm going to be covering the Chick-fil-A Kickoff Classic next Saturday, the 31st, the game between Alabama and Virginia Tech, as a media member. I finally found them, got a media pass for it. In respect to the Chick-fil-A Bowl and all of the people at the Sports Council, I'm going to pregame, I'm going to do my volunteer endeavors, helping out setting up the press box. It's going to be my third year working it. Wow, it's amazing how time flies when you're doing something you really enjoy. So I'm still going to be working with that as far as the pregame goes. But during the game and postgame, I'm actually going to do some writing, maybe get some quotes, do some interviews. Really excited about that. So the Sports Inquirer is actually getting some respect in the world of media. So I'm really excited about that. And that's going to give you some good access as far as someone at the game seeing some excellent high school and college football. And once those games come during, before, during, and afterwards, you're going to see a lot of commentary on the sportsinquirer.net. So that's going to be really fun. Speaking of sports media, a lot of good happenings in the past week and a half in that world. As you know, I'm a big Arsenal fan, follow the English Premier League on a weekly, semi-daily basis. So when, and I mentioned it a few podcasts ago, when NBC Sports bought the rights to the EPL, I said two things. One, they better not F it up. And, you know, I said my first curse word on the show, and that was really exciting. But I said, one, they shouldn't, you know, F it up or mess it up, or they better not. And the second thing I said was they couldn't be as bad as Fox Sports was. And we'll delve into Fox Sports in a few minutes. Maybe it's because of their lack of live sports content. NBC Sports is an interesting entity. They have Sunday Night Football, which they do an excellent job of. They have the Olympics, so they cover a lot of the Olympic sports, I think, very well, from swimming to track and field, things like that. And they covered the U.S. Open. They've had the U.S. Open for a really long time. Outside of those things, they don't really have many entities. NBC used to carry Major League Baseball in the World Series. They don't have any Major League Baseball presence anymore. I said the NFL, they only have that Sunday night game. They used to cover the AFC years ago, back in the 70s and 80s and really early 90s. And he's covered the AFC quite a bit. They don't have that into football as much. Ice hockey, they do have that. And they do, I think, a solid job with the ice hockey and NHL and everything like that. I thought that their coverage of the English Premier League, and granted it's been 1 week, and there's a long season, I thought it was outstanding. Outstanding for two reasons. One, the availability of all the games. I'm an Arsenal fan. They're probably one of the most popular teams, not only in the English Premier League, but internationally. So I'm pretty fortunate to see them on a semi-regular basis as far as coverage goes. But I've also followed like Wigan, Newcastle, Norwich, Everton, those teams, and especially with Fox Sports, I thought they got the shaft and didn't get enough coverage of those sports. And the NFL, the beauty of the NFL is, if you're a fan of, and I'm going to pick on a team, unfortunately, the Cincinnati Bengals. They just played the Falcons. They're in my head. Here in Atlanta, I have the opportunity to watch every Cincinnati Bengals game. If I want to break down Carlos Dunlap, see A.J. Green catch all the passes, give analysis of Andy Dalton, question Marvin Lewis's clock management, I have the ability to do that with the access of NFL packages on the various cable networks, the Red Zone package as well. I have opportunities to see all of that. When Fox Sports had the EPL, they did not have that opportunity. NBC has done a really good job to have all of those games either on the network, which you have plenty of time to fill. I think they're going to show three games last Saturday and maybe two on Sunday on the major NBC Sports Network. But online, I could have pulled up any of those games going on live. That is huge, and it's a lot of games. If I like Swansea, if I want to look at what's going on in Liverpool, if I want to see what's going to happen, you know, with Middlesbrough, I have the chance to see all of that stuff on their network. And that's a beautiful thing. So I'm really excited to have the opportunity to sit down on a Saturday or Sunday, wake up at 8 o'clock or 8 a.m. And if Newcastle is playing Tottenham and is not on the network, I can put on my computer and see it. I love that. The second thing is simplicity of it. A lot of times you see these networks when they have the things like English Premier League, rugby, even ice hockey, or the NHL, they talk down to the fan. They try to dumb it down and be insulting about it. I see it in mixed martial arts all the time with ESPN's coverage. Don't insult. As a fan, I may not know everything, but I know something. And I may be a freak and just obsessed with sports, which I am, so I know a little bit about a lot. But don't insult me with trying to... And when I say insult, here's a prime example. Fox Sports, when they would show the Champions League and other things like that, they try to bring a celebrity in there, or they'd have like the whole analysis of Manchester United is like the New York Yankees. Arsenal is like the Dodgers. What about Manchester City? They're kind of like the New York Mets. Don't dumb it down for me. Don't try to cater to the lowest common denominator. Now, explain things to the casual fans that may not be as familiar with it. And I think NBC did a good job of balancing that out and making sure that they balance the hardcore fan who files a transfer window every single day and the guy who wakes up, or the woman, that's waking up at 10 a.m., flipping the channel and say, oh, there's a soccer game going on. What's the deal? So I thought they did a really good job of balancing all of that out. They didn't kill you with graphics and a lot of cut-ins to a bunch of the other games. They didn't have the Twitter feed going down the bottom. They didn't have like the 10 scores on the side. I thought they just showed the game, let it speak for itself. And they actually had some entertaining contests. But it's not always going to be a 5-4 deal. Chelsea may tie, as I said, you know, Wigan, and it's going to be, wow, this is really boring. But in the end, if you present a good product, which EPL is, you're going to have some good positivity with it. Another thing that happened in the sports media world, the debut of Fox Sports 1. Delving a little bit into the MMA coverage, I think Fox has done a decent job with that, getting some good commentators, like Kenny Florian, I have no idea who David Stan is. I mean, I'm thinking of, anyway. Brian Stan, really good job, I think, with those guys. Jake Lazier, solid professional. Kurt Menefee, for a man who may not know as much about mixed martial arts and within the community, very respectable professional guys. I thought that their coverage was pretty solid with it. Their Fox Sports Live post-game show, or at a show, I guess they're the equivalent of their Sports Center. The problem with it is that there's so much going on with it. What are you trying to be? You have Krista Thompson, who I think is a really good, she gets a lot of flack from the bloggers and a lot of other media people. I think she's a solid pro. I'm going to get to someone who I don't think is a solid pro later on, trust me, and another punching bag for the media. I thought she does a good job. The problem is, it's so confusing. You have the panel discussion going on with Donovan McNabb, Gary Payton, Andy Roddick, and I guess maybe a few others. The problem with the panelist, they talked about baseball and the Dodgers streak. And you don't have to be a former MLB player to talk baseball, but I think it would add some structure, or add some validity to the argument. There are hundreds of baseball guys that can get. They have good baseball analysts. They have Ken Rosenthal. They have a bunch of others that they could bring in to talk about the Dodgers. But to see guys like Gary Payton and Roddick and McNabb stumbling and struggling to analyze their winning streak, that was just a, pardon the pun, but a really a foul ball by them on that. And I'm just surprised that you have someone, have the network, not have someone there to really work with that. So then, are you going to go with the panel discussion for the whole time and go with more of a that angle of things? But then you have the highlight packages with Jay and Dan, who, if you follow the media, follow the internet, really big guys as far as the anchors with TSN in Canada. They're really an acquired taste. I don't mind the snarkiness and kind of the inside jokes and the what they're trying to do. It really reminds me kind of and we'll go back for a little bit, the Dan Patrick and the Keith Olbermann guys back in the day on ESPN, kind of like that big show, the show within the show. It felt like it was kind of a light version of that. And that's not a knock on them. Dan and Keith are legends in the industry. So no disrespect as far as that goes. But I think it was just so much going on with the show. You go from the panel, then to the highlight package, which always seemed to be a second or two off. Maybe they've improved it over the past few nights. And I've seen they're getting a little bit better with it. But the problem is, it's like you go from the panelists to the analysis. And just, it's two separate entities. And it's just so much going on. And then that big board with all of the scores. And I can't decipher the Diamondbacks and the Giants game from the Yankees and the Blue Jays. I can't see that from my TV screen as far as all that stuff going on. And then when the highlights are going on, so you got the scoreboards, or the scores on the right side, you got the announcements and the Twitter feed at the bottom. It's just too much going on. And while I'm a younger fan, I'm also an old school fan too, because I came up in the 80s and 90s. So I have a Twitter feed. I mean, I understand trying to get social media and going that angle. But when you have so much going on one show, it just confuses the viewer. And then I saw the college football analysis, and that's really, really lacking. Eddie George, that's my boy from the Tennessee Titan days and everything like that back when I lived in Nashville. I think he does okay. The biggest problem with their college football analysis in their show is a continual push of Aaron Andrews as a studio host. While I know she's not working with much, and I like Petros. Petros is an excellent move by them, by the way. Getting Joey Harrington out was a solid choice, because Joey brought nothing to the table. Petros is a good guy, very opinionated West Coast guy that really ties it to their, if the ESPN has very East Coast and Southeastern Conference angle because of their financial tie-ins, you look at Fox Sports as far as college football coverage, very West Coast and Big 12 based. So I think you have a really good guy with Petros, but Erin Andrews' lack of skill, honestly, as a host, she's not very engaging. I don't think she asked the right questions. And it's not, I'm not saying she's terrible, but when you see like these other guys, and it's not a sexist thing. I said Krista Thompson, very good professional. She does a very good job. You go over to ESPN, Wendy Nix, Rachel Nichols, Sage Steele. You go down the line, there are plenty of women broadcasters. And me as an African-American, as a black man, the last thing I want to be is racist or sexist against anybody. So I think there are a lot of good commentators, and that's for women commentators. So don't start turning this into some, oh, he's a man, he doesn't like women commentator. Please, you know, save that noise. But I think her lack of skill as far as running the show, really, you see the show, it'll go good for a minute or two, and then you see like the stumbles, and that really hurts you as far as me watching the show. And I said, maybe I watch it with a critical eye because I'm a member of the sports media, so I look at it that way. And obviously the visual as far as how people look really doesn't mean much to me. I'm not going to watch a show because you have an attractive female broadcaster or, you know, or a guy who is not ugly. I really do not care. That's not why I watch it. But I think her skill, and I am picking on her a little bit, I guess, if you're listening to me speak on it for more than a minute or two. I think that's the biggest problem with their college football analysis. I think they should have her out interviewing players on the field more, maybe doing some live remotes, things like that, where she can really, because she's really good, I think, with that type of stuff. When she was on ESPN, that was a really good angle for her to be on the field, talk to players pregame and postgame, really good in that side of things. But running a studio show is completely different. And then finally, with the Fox Sports coverage, I'm looking forward to the UFC, you know, work, because they're pretty much in bed together. So if you're going to watch, there's going to be a UFC show, MMA show, yes, every single day, starting in the next week or two. Really interested to see how much coverage they give to Bellator and other promotions around the world. I didn't see one mention of Bellator at all. And if you're going to be a legitimate mixed martial arts show, you have to acknowledge their presence. So we're going to see how that works out for them. And then finally, as far as the media commentary goes, saddened to hear the role of Outside the Lines, which to me personally, you look at what your dream jobs are being, what you want to do, and everyone says, oh, well, I should be a radio announcer or call ball games broadcasting. I mean, that'd be beautiful, but I love the Outside the Lines stuff. I love hearing about, I could watch a ball game and see a win or loss and see who hit the ball well or who shot at the basket the best or who kicked the ball in the net the most. I can kind of figure that out. I love seeing the Outside the Lines stuff, the really in-depth analysis of things that don't take place, something that takes place on the field but also off the field. And seeing that show get eliminated from the daily rotation of ESPN, I do not approve of that at all. Bob Lee, who I think is, if I had to make a list of all-time favorite sports broadcasters, he'd be on my short list. Seeing his role reduced, really, I said, disappointing is the best word. And then you see the hiring of Jason Whitlock and Keith Olbermann, who are two, if there's anyone, those two guys have gotten more chances in the sports industry and honestly are not the best at their jobs, both on and off the air, and you hear stories about how both of them are not the best. You see them rehired by ESPN and getting prime coverage. I guess it shows personalities, you know, gets over talent. And just seeing those two guys hired, and I'm not knocking the hustle. Bless their hearts. They're making that money. You know, good for them. I never get jealous of someone getting a job, but they're not what that network needs. I think they have enough polarizing guys on there. As I said, Olbermann is a legendary guy in the industry. baseball knowledge, maybe more than anybody else in the industry. I just don't like him as an analyst or an announcer. And I grew up with him, but I don't like what he is right now. Jason Whitlock, as I said, plays the race button so many times, it's redundant and ridiculous. We'll see what happens with him on ESPN. And really disappointed to hear him. By the way, if disappointed is, that's the drinking game. By the way, if you've taken a shot every time I said that word, you'd be passed out right now. But hearing him go on Bill Simmons' podcast, talk about he's going to have the Black Grantland. What the heck is that about? Once again, teetering on that, I'm black, I have to represent for black people all the time, I got to say something, you know, for blacks. I hate that stuff. Obviously, your perspective of life is going to be from where you grew up. And a lot for all of us, no matter what race you are, race is a factor in how you view things. And how, because that's how people, a lot of times, your race is how people deal with you and what you go through as experiences, and you react to that, and you form your opinions on life, and it is a factor. You cannot ignore that. But if 90% of your columns and your commentary is from an angle of, I'm a black man, and as a black journalist, the A, B, C, and D, I don't respect you. It's the same thing if you are a white or another race, and that was your angle the whole time, or if your gender, or even where you're from as a country. If there was a European or African, in 90% of their commentary and writings were as from country X, this is what I think, I would not respect that either. And just seeing him get all of these chances with Fox Sports, and I've seen him on CNN at times, and now he's back on ESPN. And for a guy who, if you really break it down, is an average writer. Yes, I'm hating, whatever. He is an average writer. He's decent. But for relative to a national platform, he doesn't deserve half of the credit that he gets. There are so many other guys out there. And I think next week, this is reminding me, I'm going to give some links and throw some other guys love of excellent writers. Not just for myself. I think I do pretty well. But there's so many guys who I think if they had a national platform would get so much more respect and get much more love than they have than some of these guys on a national stage at whatever website or media platform you could think of. So those are my thoughts that on all of the media that's taking place, the events in the world of sports. When I come back, I'm going to delve into the angst of a sports fan in 2013 here on the Sports Inquirer podcast. All right, short break there. Welcome back to the Sports Inquirer podcast. Host E. Marcel Portsuit. All right, going to delve into angst of the sports fan in 2013. Just talked about the English Premier League and everything that happened there. As an Arsenal fan, they got smashed at home by Aston Villa 3-1. Quick background on it. Arsenal, one of the most storied franchises in all of English soccer. Multiple championships. Legendary players. You go down the list of all of the top guys that they've had there. The shift and change in the game of how it's managed has really passed by Arsenal and the management of the team. They went from one of those teams that had good financial resources, was revolutionary or evolutionary at times with the development of young players. They're really the first English franchise to delve into the international market for younger talents. And I'm talking a lot of French players, a lot of African players. They were, and if you, when Arsene Wenger finally retires or is fired or whatever happens to him, the current manager of the team, you're going to look back at what he was doing in the mid-90s as standard for what is going on right now. And while Manchester United has, and Liverpool are probably the two most storied franchises in the league, and rightfully so. Those teams have been doing it for decades and decades in various levels, highs and lows. Arsenal really in the 90s was, and early 2000s, a really major player in bringing the international game and style of play to England. Unfortunately, all of the other leagues emulated is really kind of like a money ball thing, where here in Major League Baseball in the United States, where the Oakland A's were using on-base percentage of different sabermetrics and statistics to take advantage of a hole in the analysis of players by the other teams. Problem is, other teams with higher financial thresholds started taking on the same principles, and the Oakland A's kind of struggled with that. Now they're back and resurgent, right in contention to be in the playoffs for another season. Arsenal has finances that rival all the top teams in the league. However, their lack of spending has been extremely disappointing. And I won't. What I'm going to do is I'm play two commentaries of fans after the game and show you how the face of the fan has changed over the years. Here is fan number one.
Fan TV, could that have went any worse?
What you saw there was the result of total incompetence by the board and the manager. And it couldn't have gone any worse. They've had 90 days to buy players. We've lost five players in one day. And due to their incompetence, there's a very good chance for all that hard work we did trying to get fourth, it could blow it Wednesday night. And I'll tell you something, one of them, if not both of them, have got to go. And I've got a message to Tim Payton and John Cross and all you media lovies, get off your arse and start saying it as it is. And the message to the board, either fucking shape up or get out, because you've let all the fans down. You should be ashamed of yourself, Gazidis.
Now listen, I know you're talking from the heart, and I can fully understand everything.
I'm telling you, mate, you can't have £180 million in the bank and you're playing Cazorla, who's just got off the plane from Ecuador, and people are booing him because he's made a mistake. The reason he made the mistake, he should have been on the pitch in the first place, because he's knackered. What is going on at this club? You've taken the pride out of it, Gazidis.
And talking about that, you know, we've got that game during the week now, and lots of injuries there, no players in, what are we going
to
do?
Due to their incompetence, they will not be able to field a team adequately on Wednesday night. And if they go out or lose 2 or 3 nil, I expect you, Wenger, and you, Gazidis, to end your resignation in. And Tim Payton, you can resign from the AST for speaking bollocks all summer.
Well said, mate.
I've had a fuck.
All right, that was the commentary from one Arsenal fan. And the reason I wanted to play that is it shows the changing face of a fan from 20 or 30 years ago. Between social media and the internet, not only do fans have access to information more now than ever, fans have the ability to provide analysis of it. Back in the day, it was all about the eye test. Like, okay, I see player A is better than player B. But now it's like, why is that? Why are we paying player A X amount of money while player B is doing this? I know what the salary cap is or what the team budget is. Why are we not spending money for the right resources? The fact that an Arsenal fan knew the board, who are the equivalent of the general manager and ownership of a team. Soccer teams a little bit different than maybe a lot of American professional teams, where you have an owner and a general manager. A lot of times it's a board, as far as multiple guys owning a team and making decisions. The fact that he knew all of those guys just shows the new face of a fan. And that was an older gentleman, who I'd probably say is in his 50s or early 60s. He had his strong opinions. He knew things. And here's another fan who looks like he's in his early 30s, looking at it from a more pragmatic and financial perspective.
The reason we don't have the quality is because what's going on with the guys wearing the suits is absolutely unacceptable. It's an absolute joke. In life, you get what you pay for, apart from if you're an Arsenal fan. Because we pay...
I like that. Can you repeat that? I might have to print that on a T-shirt. Say that again.
In life, you get what you pay for, unless you're an Arsenal fan. Because we pay £1,000, the cheapest season ticket here is about £1,000, and we pay that, and the product that we get now is not worth that. You know, other in the past it was, and I've always said that, look, we're in London, prices are higher, we're paying a premium price, but we're getting a premium product. We're no longer getting that premium product. The annoying thing is, where that money's going now is not back to the fans, and it really, really hurts. I don't buy Arsenal shirts anymore. The only time I buy from the Arsenal store is if I need something. I don't come here and spend my money because I feel like a mug. And if I feel like a mug, I don't want to come here, but I can't kid myself. I love the club too much. I want to be here. I'm not a United fan. I don't want to be on my armchair. I want to be at the stadium, you know? But it really, really starts to hurt. And what annoys me about it, and we're a commercial business now. We're not a football club anymore. Let's face it, we're a commercial organisation. Any commercial organisation, there's accountability, you mitigate risk. And at Arsenal, we don't do that anymore, do we? You know, the transfer window deadline is arbitrarily set at September the 2nd. The transfer window deadline should be set from the guys wearing the suits at pre-season, before pre-season, the tour, the friendlies, you get your players in. That is the sensible date to set a transfer deadline, not an arbitrary 1st of September. We should have had the team out today that could have won this game and that can win the league, and we don't do that. And what annoys me, there's no accountability. I personally think it's bordering on negligence. The way this club has been run, I'm an accountant myself. I genuinely think, I hope one of the board sees this, I can do a better job than you, Gazidis. I genuinely believe that, because you give yourself bargaining power, don't you, in the transfer window? You said many times today.
All right, and he goes into about some of the specific financials of how the team is doing and what they can do to improve as far as the transfer window, by the way, is pretty much a trade deadline of when you can bring players in and send them out. He looks at it from the financial angle and as an analyst, and he realizes that he knows the salaries, he knows what the market is, and while I tie it into fantasy football, and it's a fantasy football generation or fantasy sports generation, because there is fantasy soccer, we all think that we can be a general manager of a team. And while there's a lot of other factors you have to consider as far as players' attitude and what you want to build your team around, we look at the numbers and we realize what the investments are and what our money is put into. And he mentioned the cheapest season tickets around $1,000 or £1,000, which translates to about probably $1,200 or $1,300 United States dollars. And he realizes that all the money that he spent to go to a game should be transferred over to better resources for the team. And that's why I'm saying the angst of the sports fan is being informed of it. And granted, Arsenal is, and I've seen the responses because I've read the articles of why are Arsenal fans complaining? It was one game. Not to delve too deep into it, but it's really a problem that's been going on for 5 or 6 years. Well, I take it back, maybe the past 2 or 3, where the financial commitment or the finances of the team are not translated over to success on the pitch. And the fact that the fans know about this shows the angst and the change of the mentality of the fan in 2013. We're going to end the show right now with What Ruffled My Feathers. A lot of talk about Kendrick Lamar and his verse on Control, the Drake song, and him making two bold statements. One, that he's a king of New York, and secondly, talking about the lack of talent among his commentary on the lack of the contemporaries of the industry. Let's talk about the first thing in relation to hip-hop in general. Probably the biggest song released down here in Atlanta, and maybe nationally, is that Versace song that features Drake. Has he not learned from the troubles of Run DMC in the 1980s? Remember Run DMC did My Adidas? Rev Run did a whole song about his love for the Adidas sneaker. You know how much money they got from Adidas? Not a dime. Guys were talking about Tommy Hilfiger in the 90s like crazy. I remember going to the shopping outlet malls back as a teenager in the early to mid 90s. Men going crazy trying to get that Tommy Hilfiger polo. You know how much money Tommy Hilfiger contributed to the community? Not a dime. Why is Drake and all these people giving free advertisements to these industries? Unless Drake has a backdoor deal with Versace, and it's going to be part of some big advertisement in the future, and for his sake, I hope it is. Why do you continue to give free advertising to these shoe companies and these clothing companies? Ace Hood, who I'm actually a fan of, why are you doing a whole song about Bucatis? It's catchy as hell. The Versace song is catchy as big time. That song is cool, but why are you saying Versace 100 times in the song and not getting compensation for it? And that brings me to Kendrick Lamar. What he was saying in his verse and talking about all of these rappers who are not up to his standard. Hip-hop's become a running advertisement for... Here is a lot of rap songs. You talk about what you're going to do to a girl, what you're going to do in the club, what you're wearing, and what you're driving. Those are like the four things in the majority of the songs that get the majority of the airplay. Now, Kendrick is part of the Black Hippie Movement. Shout out to the Schoolboy Q, Absol. I love those guys because while, yes, they'll talk about a lot of stuff they have, they're giving some commentaries and some analysis of things that are really going on. And trust me, I'm not a backpack rapper. I don't have the Black Star emblem on my chest or are going to break out with some, you know, Fugees and talk about, oh, Mos Def is the greatest artist alive. I mean, I love that music, but I mean, I love my banging music too and all that things as well. But when the majority of it is that, what's going on in that Drake Versace song, that just kills me. And Kendrick Lamar will bring it full circle. I love Bitch Don't Kill My Vibe and Swimming Pools and all of that stuff. He represents the music movements of 2013. I was made fun of back in the day for listening to Metallica, loving my Led Zeppelin. And they're like, man, why is a Black kid listening to that stuff? Now, all races are listening to hip-hop. You got guys quoting Coldplay with mad respect. I've seen guys talking about Radiohead albums like they're classics who I wouldn't even think would listen to that if you're being generalizing about what people look like and what they listen to. I think when you have the internet, which has been the biggest factor in music in history. People talk about the electric guitar being the biggest factor, radio, MTV as the biggest revolutionary movements in music history. I say bollocks to that. The internet has been the biggest factor in the changing of music of history. And while, I mean, yes, electricity was a big factor too, but that's in life. I'm talking specifically for music. What you're starting to see, what Kendrick Lamar was talking about, is a rejection of the bojangling and the honestly close to minstrel stylings of hip-hop music. Yes, we know you have that hot car. We know you like to smoke the weed. We know you have 10 girls in the back seat. We know you like to go to strip club and make it rain. While those are beautiful things in their own lights, that's not what this is all about. This is not what life is all about. And the majority of us aren't living that lifestyle, not living that gangbanger lifestyle. And that's what I love about Kendrick Lamar, who admits that he grew up in Compton and grew up in a rough neighborhood, but he wasn't that kid getting in trouble. And he's not lying about it. That's another thing. The fake rappers who lived good lifestyles, came from good families, talking about that life. Are you about that life? You're not about that life. You don't know about that stuff. Yet you're trying to perpetrate that and present that in an image to sell records. And you have guys like Lamar who are saying, look, I grew up in that, but I'm not about all about that stuff. I knew cats, and I still have cats that I'm involved with that are in that lifestyle, but that's not all me. So to see a young man like that have that perspective on things and really take it to the industry with his control verse, I loved it. I applauded that in my room. That was outstanding. And hopefully it's a wake-up call to a lot of these other guys in the hip-hop industry to step their games up. And I think this is a good turning point and is going to change the game overall. Once again, thank you for listening to the show. It's been great hosting it. E-Marceau Portu. We're going to do a show probably on Sunday. We're going to do two major things. One, we're going to have our MMA power rankings, and we're going to do our college football preview in depth. So until then, always head to us on Twitter under Sports Inquirer, all one word, or send me an email at sportsinquirer@gmail.com. Until then, have a happy, productive, and safe weekend. Whenever you listen to this show, good fight, good night.